Today's October 2022 deep dive is Buckland and colleagues, women with a low satiety phenotype show impaired appetite control and greater resistance to weight loss, published in the British Journal of Nutrition in 2019. What we know, think we know, or are starting to know. We are always going to have voices arguing that a single isolated component of diet, sugar, seed oils, is responsible for increasing levels of body weight in the population. However, the reality is that the primary driver is an environment with constant availability of energy excess. And this is not ideal for us sapiens, a species that evolved to be very sensitive to the food environment. It is plausible that the availability of energy-dense foods during human evolution was scarce and infrequent. The scarcity of highly digestible foods in the natural environments of human evolution may have driven adaptations towards the ability to consume food beyond daily energy requirements, most likely for future energy storage. Fast forward to the modern environment, and we can add environmental factors such as portion size, visibility, and availability to the mix of factors that can trigger eating as an automatic behavior, occurring without awareness or control over the eating episode. All of this leads us to the complex neurobiology of regulating food intake in humans. There are two overlapping processes that we must consider: satiation and satiety. Satiation can be thought of as intrameal, i.e. the effects of food intake on internal inhibitory processes during consumption, which bring the eating episode to an end. Satiety can be thought of as post-ingestive, i.e. the effect after a meal on inhibitory mechanisms that influence subsequent appetite and return to hunger. These inhibitory mechanisms of intrameal and post-ingestive processes include 1. Gastrointestinal and physical effects, for example, food volume and rate of gastric emptying. 2. Appetite stimulating, known as orexigenic, and appetite suppressing, known as anorexigenic, pathways in the brain. 3. Motivation reward brain regions. And 4. Psychosocial factors like mood and emotional state, social situations, and time of day. Overconsumption of food arises when there is an imbalance between the biological drive to eat and these inhibitory processes. What if people may have weaker satiety responses compared to others? In 2015, John Blundell's research group at the University of Leeds identified a, quote, low satiety phenotype, describing individuals with a behavioral susceptibility to overeat that reflected impaired satiety mechanisms. The study we deep dive into now is the most recent study from this group in women with a low satiety phenotype. Geekbox, homeostatic and hedonic regulation of appetite. When we discuss concepts like satiation and satiety, it is important to note that these concepts are part of an overall framework of human appetite regulation. Appetite may be considered the set of processes that influence food intake. Hunger reflects the motivational drive to eat food. As such, there are distinct processes that influence both appetite and hunger. These can be distinguished as homeostatic and hedonic processes. Homeostatic processes reflect the control over how much food is eaten quantitatively, i.e. energy intake. Homeostatic regulation of energy intake is a balance between orexigenic, i.e. appetite promoting, and anorexigenic, i.e. appetite suppressing, pathways in the brain, which influence both acute and long-term energy availability, both in diet and in stored energy, meaning body fat. In theory, eating behavior will be governed solely by our energy requirements, where we would only consume as much energy as required to meet energy expenditure demands. However, humans evolved in natural environments with unpredictable food availability, and energy intake is not solely governed by homeostasis, with food-related motivation reward processes and environmental factors influencing how much is eaten. The motivation reward influence on eating is known as the hedonic process, driven by two sides of our brain reward systems: wanting, driven by dopamine, and liking, driven by opioids and cannabinoids. Wanting triggers the intense motivational urge for the food reward, while the opioid-driven liking response conveys the hedonic properties of food, often energy-dense, sugar, fat, and salt-rich foods. The main point to take home is that homeostatic regulation of appetite is not tightly controlled, and hedonic motivation to eat is influenced by social, environmental, and cognitive factors, which can promote consuming energy in excess of homeostatic needs. The study. This study was a secondary analysis of a randomized controlled trial that compared two weight management program diets in women with overweight or obesity. The Slimming World diet was an ad libitum, which is Latin for as much as desired, intake of low energy density foods. And the second diet was the NHS Live Well diet, a 600 calorie per day energy deficit following the UK healthy eating guidelines. Participants underwent a 2-week run-in phase to assess compliance before beginning the dietary interventions, which were followed for 12 weeks. Participants completed subjective assessments of appetite and control of eating every week. During the beginning and end of the intervention, all participants underwent a test day in a laboratory that compared the effects of meals with different energy density. Low energy density meals contained less than 0.8 calorie per gram of food. High energy density meals contained over 2.5 calories per gram of food. These respective energy densities were consumed at breakfast, lunch, dinner, and an evening snack. Meals were served 4 hours apart. The test days compared the effects of the low energy density diet and the high energy density diet on energy intake, appetite, and control of eating in a controlled laboratory setting. Each participant completed both low energy density and high energy density test days at both the beginning and the end of the study. To test these, both the evening meal and snack were ad libitum. Participants were free to consume as much as desired. An energy intake was recorded to compare the low energy density and high energy density conditions. Breakfast and lunch provided 50% of total daily energy requirements. The study divided participants into a high satiety phenotype or low satiety phenotype based on their subjective fullness scores in response to breakfast on the test days. The study analyzed whether the satiety phenotype of participants influenced weight loss during the intervention, energy intake, food preferences, and appetite during the low energy density and high energy density test meal days. Results. 96 women began the trial, of which 79 completed the full study. The average age and BMI were 41 years and 34 kilograms per meter squared, respectively. 26 participants were classified as low satiety phenotype and high satiety phenotype, respectively. A further 27 participants were neither low satiety or high satiety phenotypes and were not included in the analysis. Outcome 1. Weight loss during weight management diets. The low satiety phenotype lost 2.97 kg and a range of 1.76 to 4.17 kg over 12 weeks of the weight management diets, while the high satiety phenotype lost 5.28 kg and a range of 3.76 to 6.80 kg. Fat mass in kilograms was also greater in high satiety phenotypes. Outcome 2, appetite control during weight management diets. Compared to the high satiety phenotype, the low satiety phenotype participants found it harder to adhere to their diet, felt less able to stick to food choices, and reported significantly less control over their eating. Outcome 3, food intake and food preferences. Total daily energy intake was similar between the low satiety phenotype and the high satiety phenotype during both the low energy density and high energy density test meal days. Energy intake at dinner was also similar. However, during the high energy density test days, the low satiety phenotype consumed 289 calories more energy intake with their evening snack compared to high satiety phenotype participants. The low satiety phenotype participants showed higher liking and wanting responses to high energy density foods. The critical breakdown. Pros. The trial was pre-registered at clinicaltrials.gov, and the aims, hypotheses, and intended outcomes were all clearly stated in the pre-registration. The test days used a counterbalanced design, i.e. the order of testing for participants goes both ways, with participants some starting with the low energy density diet before secondarily consuming the high energy density diet, and then some participants starting with the high energy density test days and then progressing to the low energy density test days. This minimizes any effect of treatment order on the outcomes. The analysis for weight loss outcomes used the intention to treat principle, where data from all participants is included, irrespective of whether they completed the study, by using the last measurement available. This maintains balance between groups and minimizes bias from imbalanced completion rates. Similar food products were used for both low energy density and high energy density test meals, differing in their energy density, for example, using low-fat product versions. The study used validated assessments of hunger, appetite, and food preferences. Cons. The main limitation to bear in mind is that the present study was a secondary analysis, also known as a post hoc, Latin for after the event, analysis. A secondary analysis is therefore an analysis which is undertaken after the main trial has concluded, using data from that trial to look at a question that was not pre-registered. Because it is a secondary analysis and not part of the pre-planned study, it is important to note that a secondary analysis is an observational study and can demonstrate associations, not cause-effect. The trial was non-randomized, and participants were already on the respective weight management programs, which also may have introduced selection bias. The sample size was small and may have lacked statistical power to detect differences between groups. Key characteristic. Given what we know about appetite, the design of this trial is an important characteristic of the study. By combining both a 12-week intervention period with weekly appetite assessments and the acute test days, the study captured both short-term and longer-term appetite regulation processes. This allowed the study to compare the short-term differences between satiety phenotypes in response to both low and high energy density meals, while also comparing whether the satiety phenotypes influenced weight loss and longer-term appetite outcomes over 12 weeks. And what emerges from the data in this study suggests that the reason that the low satiety phenotype participants had less success during the weight loss intervention may have been due to struggling with appetite control. We can see in the data from the weekly appetite assessments that low satiety phenotype participants had significantly less control of eating episodes, struggled with food choices, and had difficulty following the prescribed diet. And while the weekly appetite assessment relied on subjective measures, the laboratory test days use objective measurements of energy intake to allow for some insight into the potential impacts of lower appetite regulation. Which leads us to the next section. Interesting finding. What is really interesting is that it appears that the energy density of foods interacts with the satiety phenotype to influence energy intake. In the test days, there was no difference between satiety phenotypes once low energy density foods were consumed. Thus, it is possible that even in the context of low satiety, low energy density foods may exert some benefit for appetite control. However, the significant interaction between high energy density foods and the low satiety phenotype is even more interesting because the significant differences emerged with evening snacking. This is interesting because even independent of satiety phenotypes, satiety is known to decrease across the day, correlating with greater energy intake in the evening. Thus, the fact that the low satiety phenotype consumed greater energy intake from high energy density foods in the evening suggests an interaction between the physical and sensory properties of the foods themselves, which were not observed with low energy density foods, and the behavioral influence of time of day. Relevance. is all lost for individuals with low satiety responsiveness? Perhaps not. The data from the present study, although a secondary analysis, suggests an effective energy density on appetite control. However, another randomized controlled trial tested the effects of an ad libitum low energy density diet compared to a control diet in both low and high satiety phenotype men with obesity. Although high satiety phenotype men lost more weight overall, those on the low energy density diet showed greater weight loss compared to the control, irrespective of satiety phenotype. Importantly, appetite control was significantly improved on the low energy density diet in both low satiety phenotype and high satiety phenotype participants. A recent meta-analysis of 12 interventions targeting satiety enhancement in diets showed that enhancing satiety and improving appetite control resulted in an average of 3.6 kilograms with a range of 1.05 to 6.15 kilograms greater weight loss compared to control diets. This is consistent with research demonstrating that reductions in appetite correlate with improved weight management both acutely and sustained over 12 weeks. It is important to note that emotive and behavioral aspects of appetite are distinct, and one cannot simply be considered a proxy for the other. This is crucial when we consider appetite regulation because it is possible to target specific dietary interventions that may enhance appetite regulation. For example, Jakubowicz and colleagues showed that consuming high-energy breakfast that emphasized protein and carbohydrate intake led to significant suppression of ghrelin, the, quote, hunger hormone, an effect that persisted up to 16 weeks after the initial weight loss intervention. The effect of high morning energy intake on appetite was recently confirmed in a more rigorously controlled intervention, which showed that consuming around 40% of energy at breakfast led to significant reductions in subjective appetite over the course of the day, compared to the same amount of energy at dinner. Thus, it is plausible that while humans with low satiety responsiveness may be biologically predisposed to overconsume when highly palatable, energy-dense foods are available, there are also strategies that are available to mitigate this through enhancing satiety and appetite. Application to practice. While at first glance these findings may appear to be disheartening for people who struggle with appetite control, in fact from an application perspective this may not be the case. The findings in relation to the effects of low energy density foods, and in terms of what we know about the wider impact of time of day on appetite control, indicate that there are ways of enhancing the satiety derived from diet while improving appetite. The first appears to be an emphasis on enhancing satiety through diet. High volume, low energy density foods, for example non-starchy vegetables, fruits, legumes, or Greek yogurts, appear to benefit appetite control and satiety in individuals with a low satiety phenotype. A second strategy would be to front-load energy intake, aiming for high energy intakes early in the day, which appears to enhance appetite regulation, suppress ghrelin, and attenuate evening hunger levels. Thank you for listening to this audio version of this deep dive, and I will see you again next week.